That's turn one right on New Rio, Roberts, New Rio, turn one right, this Saturday after lunch, the 30th of May, about that, 1970, beginning of turn one right of a New Rio, and this is Roberts' visit. And we're all crowded around him, first and last, turn one right, a New Rio, Roberts' visit, Saturday, about the 30th of May, 1970.
Could I give you a glass of tea and a piece of cake right now?
I'll take one. Somebody else said they'd take one, surely.
Okay. I had to kidnap him away from
my friend. I'm glad you did.
Robert's got friends.
No, a man came there, guy, to talk about some real estate, some lots, trailer lots.
Yeah.
And I told him that I couldn't see anything. I can't go out and show any trailer lots. I'm not selling real estate.
Well, they think you're indestructible, you see.
Yeah, I am indestructible. And also, I found out, too, that on a state, he thought that culverts, the county, if you have you out here, your road is a county road.
Yeah.
If you want an extra culvert put in, the county, Roy Miller, will send down and put a culvert in for you for nothing. Now, he may charge you for the culvert, but the fill and the labor and all the work on it wouldn't cost you anything. They'd send down the crew of convict crew. Now, on a state road, though, like over home there, you have to pay for the culvert. You have to get a permit, and they tell you what size culvert to put in. Then you have to get the culvert, order the culvert either out of Largo or out of Lake Butler. And then you have to get landfill, you have to get fill dirt, which costs, it costs you for an ordinary culvert, it costs you at least $100. Your culvert's going to cost you $100.
It costs that much?
So I told this man it cost him at least $200, and I don't know what it would cost, $250 by the time you get the labor, because people don't do anything anymore for nothing. Can't get them to do anything for nothing.
Oh, I never dreamed a culvert would cost that much.
Yeah, your culvert start out, an ordinary culvert start out at $80. Now it depends on how 16, 18, 20, 22, 24 inches, whatever the state, whatever state brownie orders, why, that's what you got to put in, that's all. Brown is it. Supervisor of engineering for the state, but now Roy Miller, of course, is supervisor for it.
You know, I need a culvert. I need a culvert right down here in the bottom, where the water comes, drains down there into that so-called pond.
So you can go across, you mean?
Yes. It gets. You see what happens. The cattle go across there, and they tromp the dirt out, and it gets deeper and deeper. And there's never any great deluge of water to go down there. It never washes anything.
So, you know, sometime Roy would be taken out. You know these culverts that are go this way instead of being round? You've seen those. You've seen these sort of egg-shaped culverts?
No.
Hmm?
No, if I have, I sure haven't noticed.
Well, there's a culvert that's wider. Of course, being blind like I am, I'm using my hands. I hope I'm right, but there's a culvert that comes around like that. It's flat on the bottom, and then comes up. And that'll carry off more water. And sometimes the county takes those funny-looking culverts out and put round ones in. If I see Roy or I talk to Miss Coombs, If they're taking some out that are good,
yes,
that would do what you want down there.
Oh, yes.
You don't have to have a brand new culvert down there.
Lord, no.
And you could take.
If I just knew where to pick it up, I could even. Well, they got better haul than I have.
Well, they would. I don't think Roy'd charge you haul the darn thing. The case here would be for you to get someplace and get a. Do you have a scraper on your tractor?
Mm-hmm.
You could.
Yeah, I got a little scraper. It'll move.
Thank you.
Dirt a little bit. Robert, let me tell you. You have what you told me now with your infirmity on your eyes. You have gone into that in a remarkable way. You know, just like you were saying a while ago. Now. We're talking about the doctor's face.
Yeah.
Well, just so Carl Van Arnum, and I just said it now, Ruth just said before I left there, she said now, after all this week, this past week, and what's occurred this past week, I can go to Carl now. In fact, I'll call him Monday and talk to him about it.
Well, let me tell you.
Go to see Carl.
Let me tell you, Robert, before we get it. Carl very easy to see. If you don't need anything, he gives you an appointment 2-3 months ahead. But if you need anything, you can go right in there. Now you know the other day after I talked to you, I went in there. I went down there in the middle of the afternoon, and I told the girl that I wanted to get my eyes dilated and wanted him to check it, see if it was going bust again anymore. He told me to come in, and so I. Yes, I sat around there an hour, all told. And then she put drops in my eyes. And I sat back there in a dark room and got drowsy and comfortable. And then he put me in one of the other rooms. I wasn't there 10 minutes till Carl came and looked at me. I didn't have an appointment.
You see, the trouble I had was Carl told me originally that he would call me, so I waited.
He won't call anybody.
I waited 2 weeks and some children.
Well, he told Faye the same thing. He told everybody I know that he'd call them.
So then I called up, and Ruth had also had a little bit of difficulty. He'd got a receptionist up there. Oh, I don't know. But she asked me, after she told me that Dr. Van Arnum had so many appointments that day, and it wouldn't be possible for me to talk to him until at least 5 or 5:30, if then.
Yeah.
And now, if you'd like to tell me your problems, Mr. Smith, boy, if I told her my problems, her face would be, well, I'm afraid to tell her why it burnt the house down.
Robert, tell me what you were saying a while ago about that rusty plumbing. I think that's right. I think that's remarkable.
What? You mean, well, just because, well, at my age, you know, when I was originated, they didn't put in copper tubing. They just put in some old iron pipe, and it got rusty, and of course, the flake, you know, just corroded in there. And so it's just corroded, that's all, flaked in there. And
yeah.
Another clot of rust come along, and it stopped. That's
but
all.
But then the doctors get the hand in your pocket.
Yeah, but I stopped them from getting the hand in the pocket, and they all got mad at me.
Oh, how's that?
I told them I wouldn't have the operation. Why have the operation?
Well, I'm not so sure.
Hmm?
I'm not so sure.
Yeah, they just want
to. Yeah, I'm not going to have any more.
What? They want to get into the arteries.
They want where the main artery branch is. They want to cut and scrape the artery, and I said no, I'm not going to do it. Heck with it.
Heck with it.
I didn't say it that mildly either.
But then you run into these other fellas, Robert. Who's had the same thing?
Yeah, you know, George. Can't think of George's last name.
Yeah.
He's a nut. this man I'm speaking about, he and his wife come up and they drive a Corvette, you know, one of these fancy Corvettes. I guess the darn thing would cost $9,000-$10,000. There's plastic bodies on them, you know, and a great big wide racing tires, and the thing will go 150, 160 miles an hour. He needs it like I need a hole in my head. But I didn't know that, and he's very active, and he has a restaurant in Ocala. And do you know what he does? He comes all the way up here with his wife to Arby's to get a roast beef sandwich. That's the truth. And you don't believe me, you ask Cruz. So George has had trouble for 2 years, and I didn't know it. And he's been doing the same thing for 2 years, and he's just as active today, and there's nothing wrong with him. So if he can do it, I can do it.
Sure.
Yeah. And the other fella.
Oh, the other fella told me they wanted to do it to him, and he said, He said, one little flake, and he said, I have a stroke, or I be, one little flake gets by, and he said, it gets to my brain. He said, I have a stroke and become an invalid, and he said, I'm a burden on everybody. He said, I'm not going to do it. Or he said, it gets to the brain and it knocks me out. He said, that'd be all right, but he said, that being a burden on somebody, no, I'm not going to do it. And here he is, that's been 2 years ago, and he's walking around, he's all right.
Now you see, Clay, that's really knocking yourself when you start. You gotta protect yourself against the dad burn knockers, Robert.
Well, I told your good wife what I told the doctor when he looked at me first, and he examined me, and you know they put you in one of those vices and they slap your head in and like you're going to take a tintype portrait, you know, a little portrait, they stick your head in it. Put you in a chair and your head's stuck there, and then they put a lot of gadgets on your face and twirl these things, and light a light down the corridor with a lot of pinwheels and doodad things in there.
Yeah.
Then he made a preliminary examination and he turned the overhead light on and I could see him. My eyes hadn't gotten too bad then. And he stood back there and he posed and he said, to what do you allude the rapid deterioration of your eyesight? I told him his mom this, and I said, you want to know what caused me to lose my eyesight rapidly? He said, yes. I said, well, I'm looking at too many guppy skirts. Guppy skirts. I said, yeah, guppy skirts. He said, well, I know what a mini skirt is, but I don't know what a guppy skirt is. I said, well, a guppy's smaller than a mini. He said, oh, for goodness sake. He didn't say that, but that's the way I'll put it. So then he went on and examined my eye, but 2 days later they were worse than ever, so that was $50 so
away. You know, it just costly just step in the office. I remember Cookie was having some trouble here last summer, and he went to just to have an examination, just a mere examination, have the doctor look at him. It cost $35, and I told him this neurologist had just come to town, and he had an appointment.
You mean the same neurologist I went to?
Yeah. And he found out that it cost $40 just to look in on him, and he just drew the line. He wouldn't go.
I went in. They told me I needed another cardiogram about 2 years ago, not a year and a half ago. About a year and a half ago. I said, now look, I've had 100 cardiograms, and unless you're having a heart attack or you're having trouble with your heart at the time, I said a cardiogram isn't worth a hoot. I've had 100 of them or more.
And paid for them.
Well, most of them I didn't pay for because the Navy paid for them. And this bird gave me a cardiogram, and then afterwards he hauled me in the office and he examined me superficially, and he had a sort of a consultation with me, and when I got through it was $65. Boy, I'd have a lot more fun if I could just take my $65 out and pitch pennies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
It's just like Sam Mixon. I don't know whether you know Sam Mixon. You know Sam Mixon?
Yes, Mom? I know the Mixons. I knew their daughter.
And Sam came in. He'd been up to Boston to the Lighty Clinic up there. He came in and I asked him how he was doing. He said, "Oh," he said, "I just came back from the Lighty Clinic up in Boston." He spent all that time and all that money. He said, "You know," he said, "I'd have been a D side better off," he said, "if I'd have gone over to the dog track and played the dog."
How about that? Robert?
So we have a lot of fun anyway.
Suzanne, one of my pupils.
It must be her children then, I hear out there.
No.
Okay. I don't know what the hell she is. She's not anything now. She's just Ms. Harrell, I guess. I would say, but she does a lot of interesting things. Now, she's read all these. She's read everything I've read, and she understands it most of it better than I do. But now, she don't know the countryside.
You mean this countryside around here?
Any of them. This one in particular. I don't know whether she'll ever get a hand in the countryside or not. You know, it just looks green and pretty to her. Now, one of the most remarkable things that you ever told me, and I don't want the names now, because that doesn't matter. But over there, where that old frame two-story house was, that burned up.
Yeah.
And the fire was so hot it even melted the glass.
It did.
I want you to sort of line that out for me.
I wish I'd saved some. In fact, someday if I find some, if I can ever see, I'll find some. I'll try and find some of the darn glass around there and see if I can't find some. But that glass melted all together and just little globules. No, some of them are bigger than you could hold in your fist. Some are just little pebble things like. And of course, being different colored jugs and different colored demijohns, and the window panes were different colors, and they all got together. And the fire was so doggone hot that it just fused them all together. And that glass, it really melted the glass, just melted the darn stuff. But the reason it was the houses here are, I don't know where you're from, but the houses here are built up off of the ground. And they're built up off the ground for several reasons, but years ago they built them up 24 inches off the ground, maybe. And now this man that was in this house, he had demijohns and 5-gallon cans and gallon cans and all underneath the house. And up on the second floor, he had a good still working. The only trouble was that he went to supper and he forgot, and the still was going full blast, and while he was eating his supper, he just forgot it and the darn thing exploded. And there was so much alcohol and it was so hot that it just melted everything. With the alcohol, there's so many demijohns alcohol in there, and in the house itself.
You mean even the ones on the ground or under the house?
Yeah. It just all the whole thing went up, and all these demijohns and the ones that were in the house and the ones and the cans, the cans on the ground, it just all fell apart because it was so hot. The solder that held the cans together.
But now, was he living there then?
Sure, he was eating his supper.
Had his equipment
still
upstairs.
Up in the second floor, back bedroom. That would be the bedroom toward where the candy shop is. And there's pecan trees there below the candy shop. That would be to the west of the house. Mm-hmm. Had a wonderful well there, wonderful well of water. It was a beautiful well. And we had to do away with it because of the road. And then I had Joe Hare drill another well up there in the field because I wanted to build a house back there. You know where that well is, and that thing is no good at all. But the water there was wonderful. But that house, that was the old Mary house. Mm-hmm. One of the old Mary houses, and that went up. I mean, when we moved there, you couldn't tell. You couldn't. In fact, the man who was in charge of soil conservation in Marion County at that time, he came up and he spent 2 days up here with his tractor. And when he got down in there where that house had been, he couldn't see where he was going, and he got stuck down in there, and it took about 4 hours to get the poor guy out of there with his tractor. It was an awful mess. I wondered why the glass had all fused together. So old man Elton and Joe Smith told me about why.
They knew all about it.
Sure, everybody seemed to know about it.
What sort of operation was it? Was that for use?
Yeah, before I got there. The house was, I had never saw the house. The house had burnt down. And I didn't even know where it was till Horace Hull got stuck in there. Horace was the soil conservationist for Marion County. And Horace and Helen came up to help us out and help us find the corners, because you couldn't see. You could stand there where the back kitchen door is and you couldn't see the barn. Now that sounds ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It's so thick.
I'll tell you, there was a bird up there in town that could quote scripture frontwards, backwards, upside down, inside out. And I stood 30 feet away from him, and I knew what he was doing. He was stealing a lot of stuff from me, but I darn if I could see him. But I knew he could quote scripture because I asked him, and he started quoting me a lot of scripture that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
You know, boy. And so now when anybody starts quoting scripture to me, why, I take a safety pin in my pocket.
Roberts, have you been...
No, I haven't been to church.
What's the closest you have been to the to a nice little community still?
What's the closest I've been to?
Yes, close associated. I've been associated with them, but you see, I never was observant like you did, and I didn't know exactly what went on. I went home. I went down the country one time with some fellas. I fell in with them on the road just out Hoboken.
You mean out in Knoxville?
No, I was out Hoboken, and they lived down in southern Alabama, right as far as you can go. And they had a little plain house out there. Little plain country house, no paint on it, and the only money they get hold of was from moonshine. And I went out there a lot of times to steal, and you know, we'd take a little swig from that warm drippings, and that'll knock your mind in. And then they had it quarts or half gallon, whatever it was, I forget, stuck down the ground all around, you see. Not
yeah, mason jars, too. You
mason
them.
Jars, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Shoot, you couldn't drink it out of a mason jar, you couldn't drink it.
That's right.
Well, you know, they're getting an awful price, these antique dealers, for those old mason jars. I wish I had some.
Well, they've got a lot of associations.
Oh, you talk about stills here. Back Germantown, Philadelphia is a Germantown is a part of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Is a section of Philadelphia. In fact, it's one of the older sections where a lot of the all signers of the Declaration of Independence live. The old Shoe Mansion is there, and a lot of Fairmount Park and so forth. Now, I had an uncle, Charlie Smith. He was one of the few uncles of seven that I got along with. And he lived right next to a big churchyard, St. Mark's Church, Episcopal Church. And a great big high picket fence. And you heard of Janet Gaynor, I know, in the movies. And Janet could climb that fence faster than any of us boys could. The baseball go over there, she'd get over that fence quicker than we could. And Janet used to play there. Some people call her Lynette. When we were kids, it was Janet. Now this locale that I'm speaking about was right there in Germantown. It was right next to a big department store, right next to the churchyard, in between the department store and the churchyard. And my uncle had this plumbing shop. So, and he used to have a bunch of hunting dogs, all six or eight. I don't know what he had the hunting dogs for. He never went hunting. At least I don't know what he was hunting. And I didn't know for a long time what Charlie was doing. But Charlie had all the police influence that you would want. I mean, he could do anything he wanted. If he wanted to put a pipe and run a pipe one place in Germantown, he ran it. I mean, nobody ever said that boo to Charlie. You have to get a permit to do that, and you can't do this, and you can't. Nobody ever said that to Charlie. Charlie always ran it. Charlie had taken, remember those old gas water heaters, gas yeah. stuck on the side of a 30-gallon tank? They yeah. called them RUD, R-O-U-D, I think. There was nothing but a coil, a copper coil, and underneath you put a gas flame and it heated the water.
Yeah.
Well, what Charlie did was he took two of those copper coils and he made himself a stilt and he had it down the cellar. Now, I didn't know this for a long time. And he'd get charred oak kegs. Guys, leave it out.
No, he just, the children were coming down. He was just we've got two little children in the house.
Old Charlie get charred oak kegs. And with these charred oak kegs, and he would he'd run this mash off, and he would fill up two of these big kegs. In fact, the kegs came from Freddie Gross's up the street. Freddie had a beer saloon up there, and Freddie got these big, they used to call them hogsheads, 55-gallon charred oak kegs.
Yeah.
And he'd get these 55-gallon charred oak kegs, and he would fill two of them, and then he would quit. Well, the cops would come in, and they'd want a pint or a quart. You'd give it to them. At Christmas time, why, there was a regular stream of them coming in and going out, and they all got whatever they wanted. So Charlie could do as he darn well pleased. And he had that still down the cellar there. I never knew it still for quite some time, but one day I was over there and I kept smelling something. I said, Uncle Charlie, what is that? He said, you want to taste it? I said, no, I don't want to taste that. I don't know what it is. He said, it's good. I said, well, maybe it is, but I don't. Well, he said, come on, I'll show you. And that was the most clever still that I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, two of those coils out of a RUD water heater.
Yeah.
Two copper coils. And he cleaned them out real good.
Yeah.
And he used silver solder with no lid to it. He used silver solder to solder the things together. And he had done it properly. And those cops and everybody, boy, they really enjoyed themselves. And you couldn't buy whiskey either at that time.
Yeah.
During Prohibition, you couldn't buy it. Still.
Yeah.
But that same bird that ran the still, though, he used to run a still out here on an island. But you couldn't catch him. Because when they go to get a search warrant, why the secretary there, the judge, the secretary call them down here and say, the revenuers are coming, you better hide.
How about that, yeah.
The old Judge McDonald, old Harry, he was a judge.
Yeah. He was there a long time, wasn't he?
Yep, Harry there a long time. I know one time I went to him, I told Harry, I said, these things are all wrong. They're illegal, they're not legal at all. I said, a man making his own laws. Harry looked it up in a book. He said, no, I think maybe they're right. Boy, it cost $2,500 to get those things off that book. He didn't know anything.
Tell him we'll be out in a minute, Faith.
Yeah. Okay.
Robert, Mr. Old Man Rollison, how long did he survive?
I don't know about it. I never knew him.
He's gone when you came.
Yeah, I never knew him. I knew the old lady, and boy, she was a hard worker.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did you know about her?
She's a real hard working old lady. Real good. She was awful old, but an independent.
Yeah.
Oh, she was independent.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of stories you hear about Raymond Rollison.
Yeah.
Raymond got killed out here on the highway with John Miller Symington.
Yeah.
And the night before he got killed, he was about a little more than half tight. And he hadn't had anything to eat, and Ruth and I pleaded with that guy for an hour to come in and have something to eat. We'd cook whatever he wanted, give him whatever he wanted. And he wouldn't eat anything. And of course, he kept on drinking, and the next morning he got killed.
Did you know him in his prime before he got to a little bit wild?
Well, I never thought he was so doggone wild, to tell you the truth. I heard a lot of tales about him, but to me, he was always all right. Oh, sure, he'd get drunk. But I don't mean the one that shot up the town. I don't mean him. I don't know anything about that. Somebody, one of them shot up the town, but that wasn't, I told him that wasn't Raymond. And somebody have to admit it wasn't Raymond. Raymond might have done things that people said were wild, but he was all right. He was a good old. The same way with old Cap Gordon over there. I wish you'd known old Cap. Cap Gordon was a cattle gyp.
Mm-hmm.
A cattle, you know what a cattle gyp is. I mean a real gyp.
Yeah.
And Cap came to me one time and he went to buy some hogs. I'd known him a long time just to speak to him and pass the time of day.
Now this is what I want to hear.
Yeah, I'd known him a long time and just would pass the time of day, and I knew his good wife, and they lived in a little house up there in town. So Cap came, he wanted to buy some hogs. He said, Robert, I want to buy some hogs. I said, okay. He said, now look. He said, I'm going to do some business with you. He said, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to tell you a lie. But when it comes to a business deal, if I can gyp you and I can beat you, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to gyp you. In fact, I'm going to gyp the H out of you. I said, that's okay with me. I said, if you can beat me that way, but just don't lie to me. He said, I won't lie to you. I said, okay. And he was one of the best friends that we ever had. That man would come around, and he would, as old as he was, he had more strength than I did, and he would help, and he would work, and if a person's mule was in the ditch, he'd help pull him out. Yet, a lot of people talked about him, but he didn't lie. But brother, when it came to a deal, one day he bought 128 head of hogs, I think it was, well, pigs and hogs, and from us. And it was next day or the day after, he says to him, "Robert, are you mad at me?" I said, "Mad at you?" He says, "Yes." I said, "Nope, I'm not mad at you, Cap. Why?" He said, "Well," he said, "I sure took you." I said, "You took me?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I bought all those pigs and those hogs from you." And he said, "I sure took you." I said, "You took me?" He said, "Yep." He said, "I sure got the best of you in that deal." I said, "That's all right." He said, "You're not mad at me?" I said, "No, I'm not mad at you." "Well, for goodness sake," he said, "shake hands." I said, "Look, Cap," I said, "I was satisfied with the price, and you were satisfied with the price. We made a deal, and that's all there is to it." And I said, "I'm satisfied, and you're satisfied." He said, "I thought sure," he said, "you'd be mad at me, because," he said, "I sure took you." He said, "I made a lot of money on those hogs." I said, "More power to you. I'm glad you did."
Is that right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did he take you, Robert?
He felt that he had taken me because he hadn't given me enough money. He thought he had shortchanged me.
But you were satisfied.
I was satisfied.
And you knew how much he was making.
I didn't care how much he made. He had all the work. I had nothing. All he had to do was load them, and he took them to market, or he sold them individually. Of course, he gypped somebody else on them. That's all right. I don't care who he gypped. He was a cattle gyp.
Well,
he'd buy a lame horse and get the horse patched up so the horse could walk. He'd sell that horse as a sound horse. Maybe the horse would go lame 2 days later, but that was all right. The horse could walk all right when he sold it.
Well, did you see some of his trades like that?
Sure.
Lame horses?
One lame horse. I don't know how he doctored it up.
Well,
I'm holding you folks back from something.
No, we just listened to you. What was the circumstances?
He bought an old horse up at auction, up in Gainesville. Oh, what do they call those? I forget what they used to call those old horses they sold there. Anyhow, they'd slaughter them, you know, and use them for dog meat.
Oh.
I forget what the name they had for them. And this old gray horse, it was old, too. I imagine the horse was 20, 21 years old. And it was lame. So Cap brought it home, put it in the backyard. He rubbed the liniment on it. He bandaged the doggone thing up. And he'd rub it. And he'd get that big old muscle in the back leg there. He'd shake it and get it. And after a while, he got that darn fool horse. And oh, there was something wrong with the hoof. It had cracked. And he packed it looking like tar in there. It was some kind of medicine, looked like tar. Packed that in there. Got that horse so it could walk. Didn't limp. Well, it was walking around the yard. I won't say it wouldn't limp out on the road, but around the yard, he'd walk around the yard. So a fellow from over here at Stark bought it and paid him. I think Cap got it for around $20. And he sold to him for $155. Of course, 3 days later, the horse was limping again, but that...
Well, now, you know, I've known cattle gyps, but I've never known them as well as you have. But I always figured, Wilson, these fellas ought to get rich. But you know, I never did see any of them that had anything.
They never get rich. They never get rich.
Well, what happens to the money?
Well, they make them one day, they'll make, the next day they'll lose. They're not always making, they lose.
You mean he could have lost on that old horse?
Sure, he could have spent on it. One time he bought 8 hogs from me. And I know darn right well he lost money on them. But he had an idea in his head what he was going to do, and it just didn't work out. And he lost money.
What was he going to do?
He was going to sell them as registered hogs, and he had no registration papers, and I wouldn't give him registration papers on them. I sold the hogs to him at meat prices.
Yeah.
And they weren't fit for registration.
Yeah.
But he thought, you know, that after he got the hogs at meat prices, well, then he'd come along and he would get me to sign 8 registration papers. I said, no, I'm not going to sign those registration papers.
So he didn't make anything much on that.
He had to sell them for meat prices. And he kept them there for 30 days or more, feeding them.
Yeah.
And a hog eats.
Yes, that's right. A trader can't hold on too long, so much how it's going in the feed.
Here, I'm holding you back from someone out there.
So.
Hmm?
No, sir. I want Faye to come in here. Little Faye. She don't know anybody around here. You know, this little Faye, you don't have to close the door. She's the one I was telling you about this morning. She's had access to this place all her life. Well, ever since I've been down here. And she came down here one time. She's going to stay a while, and her children got sick and had to go right back. And you know, she don't know.
Well, what's this little girl here?
She's one of my students up at the
I didn't know.
Her name is Suzanne. Suzanne.
See, I can hardly see her guy. I can see out of this one eye.
Yeah.
I can hardly.
Yeah, that's Faith.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Glad to see you.
You see, Faye has had, I just don't know how it is, but I've had this place, you see, all this time, and she can't even drive a nail, I don't think.
She can't drive a nail.
She don't know a staple from a nail.
Well, just so you don't have her digging post holes. Is that what he had you doing this morning?
I was standing around, mostly. My husband can do it.
Yeah. She's big enough to do it herself.
Oh man, well, when you're on a farm, you have to. Everybody has to do everything that has to be done. That's all. You ought to hear my wife tell about. She's never had anything to do with animals on a farm. You ought to hear her tell about. The first time with these hogs, I bought 2 bred gilts.
Yeah.
And then I proceeded to get sick. You heard her tell me.
No.
You have to get her to tell you. Boy, I mean, she didn't know anything about hogs, and she didn't know anything about bred gilts. And so I proceeded to get sick, and she had to do everything. She had to take care of them. She never. I've gone to sleep on many a hog, many a night. Just with my head on them. I have, and cold. And I learned too that if you put a light in a firing pan, the old sow won't roll on the pigs, and she'll look around and get them all in a huddle before she lay down. It's when they can't see that they lay on them and kill them. I learned that. But the first few nights when you're a poor farmer and you have to save those pigs, you stay right with them. So I'd go to sleep on a old sow. Lay down on the straw and put my head back on her and go to sleep. And when she started that old pump going again, why, that darn old thing going chunka chunka chunka, I'd wake up.
Yeah.
And my wife's dug post holes. Fact of the matter, she won't let me dig one now.
Ruth is one of the best.
She won't let me dig a hole.
On hogs. I mean, she's just fascinated with hogs. And now she's just full of candy now, you know, in the business end of it.
She'd rather have hogs.
But she lights up whenever hogs come up.
We had spotted Polar Chinas. I tell this, I wish I had a picture of them. Maybe she's got pictures of it, I don't know. But we had a great big boar. I can't see how long this table is, but I'll bet he was as long as this table. He weighed over 1,000 pounds, about 1,100 pounds. And his little
1,000 pounds.
And his little legs were any bigger than that. He was a Gates lowdown boar. A great big thing. And all she'd have to say to him was, "Come on, Prince." And he'd follow her. He'd go along. Go along right in back of her. She could lead that doggone thing all over the place.
Yeah.
I say he'd weigh 1,000 pound guy. I don't know how much he'd weigh.
Well, yes.
I don't know how much he weighed, yeah. But he was huge. He was a great big thing. And we were so attached to that crazy knocker because he was just like a puppy dog. He'd do anything she told him to do almost. And so we wouldn't have him slaughtered. We gave him to the 4-H boys at Lake City for a project, you know, for a round robin project up there. He was too good a boar to be killed. We had another boar there, Liberator. We called him Libby. He was quite a well-known breed and a well-known boar. And Joe Diaz, who was a big butter and egg man here in the state of Florida, Joan Francis.
Yeah.
Oh, you've read of Francis giving $100,000 to Boys Ranch up here.
Yeah.
Well, Francis, a little bitty girl, woman. Well, Joan Francis wanted to start in the hog business, and he called me up one day from Tampa and talked to me. He and A.D. Davis were very, very, very close friends. A.D. Davis was Winn-Dixie,
yeah,
and had Santa Fe River Ranch. He called me up one day about hogs and over the telephone. I told him he was crazy. So he'd lose his shirt if he kept on doing what he was going to do. Well, he didn't pay any attention to me. I didn't see him. I didn't hear from him. About 6 months later, he drove in there. He says, "I want to see that fellow." He said, "That told me I was crazy."
Come on, door, Robert. Go ahead. I can get you.
So he admitted that what I told him was right. He lost a lot of money. But he bought Spotted Paul in China then.
Davis was a spark plug up there at Santa Fe River Ranch.
Spark plug?
Uh-huh. He was a driving wheel up there. A.D. Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this last year, I haven't been up there in some time.
Well, that fellow that's up there managing the place is Mrs. Davis' brother.
Yeah.
Sneed.
Yeah. Well, now you see, they can all run the operation. But it took a fellow like Davis to put the drive in it.
Yeah, manage it.
They didn't do well on this last sale, you know.
Now, Guy, I don't know. I don't know anything about Davis's sales. But one time, you know, there's one heifer up there, I think they called her Baby Doll. Brought $21,000 or $22,000, some fool thing like that. This fellow over here, Dixie Lily Meal and Grits, fellow over here at Williston.
Yes.
Can't think of his name either.
He died.
He bought it, you know. That's good business. Dixie Lily Meal and Grits,
yeah,
selling all,
yeah,
a lot of grits and meal and whatnot that,
yeah,
when Dixie stores.
Yeah.
So. And another thing is, you take the hog business. You're gonna have a big auction. Say somebody's got a big herd of Belted Hampshires, and they get a name for themselves, and they build up a name, and they have a couple of reserve champions or one grand champion or something like that, and they get a lot of notoriety. They have an auction. Well, they'll have a stool pigeon or somebody like that in there and in this auction group. And that fellow will bid and bid and bid, and he'll bid a boar up to, say, $5,000 or $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be loaded. He'll sign a check and give it to the owner. He'll load that boar on his truck, and he'll take him away, and he'll keep him on his place for about 3 months. And 3 months later, you'll see him right back in the same old original pen.
Yeah.
That check was never used, but the guy who bid this $5,000 or $6,000 got a check for $500 and money for keeping the darn thing. That's to sort of build up the price of a future stock that you can sell.
Well, this last year.
So you could do the same thing here. You could have an auction and you could sell some of yours off and you could get, well, let's get Sir S. Gross back from Asbury Park or
whatever.
Yeah. Get somebody bid it up and take it off. Hey.
Robert, how did Sir S. get up there? What was the idea of him going up there?
The judge ordered him to go. No reason for him to go.
Take care of his children?
Hmm?
Go up there and take care of his children?
Well, frankly, he was taking care of the children here better than anything else.
Yeah.
But they just, I think the welfare wanted to get one more off the welfare roll and get it up there.
You mean really?
Sure, that's what I think. My opinion. But they acted. Oh, well.
Well, what good would he be up there, Robbins?
He's no good. He's washing windows and mowing lawns up there. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mowing lawns and washing windows. But, and that's the reason why I told you that you couldn't get any of these automobile people to come look at his old truck. They won't come look at the truck. Maybe while I'm sitting here talking, somebody will be there looking at the truck and tell Ruth how much it's going to cost to fix it. Worth a hoot.
Well, now, you see, this fella, I got acquainted with this fella. He's a nice fella, Roberts. C.S.
He would be all right if he didn't have that wife.
Oh, she's poison, isn't she?
She's in trouble.
She took one lick at me, and I haven't appeared since.
She cut him. Down here they had a fight, and she cut him, and he had the cuts, because I saw him. But the judge didn't pay attention to that. He put all blame on him.
Yeah.
She was the one cut him. He was just trying to do, the fact of the matter is, I think he was trying to protect the children.
Yeah.
But he's up there and he isn't doing so well. But if he comes back here, he'll expect everybody to take care of him back here. So what?
Yeah.
That's the trouble.
Well, I got acquainted with C.S. that summer, spring of that, the old wind had melons back there. And C.S. got his eye on that old Chevy station.
Is that still a, no, it's a Chevy sedan he got up there, isn't it?
And he'd appear from nowhere just to come out here. But, you know, there's a lot of time between loading.
Mm-hmm.
Certain stages in melons, you see, they pick them up, they cut them all, and then they wait for the big trucks to come pick them up. Well, when there's a lot of times like that, you see, he could appear over here. He wanted to talk about that wagon, that station wagon. And I found that he was just a remarkable talker, Robert. Now,
superstitious as the dickens.
Oh, is he?
Psh, yeah. That's one big trouble with him. He's superstitious. And his aunts and all the whole crew are awful superstitious. Well, old Francis, his grandmother, was superstitious as the dickens. And they believed that if you killed a rattlesnake and you didn't burn it, you'd have bad luck and one of them would bite you.
Yeah.
You had to burn it.
Had to burn it.
They had all kinds of crazy, and he's superstitious as the dickens. And he wouldn't eat, if he was starving up home there, he wouldn't eat anything Ruth cooked. He wouldn't eat it. He wouldn't eat anything she cooked. Seriously, although he thinks a lot of her, he wouldn't eat anything she cooked. He never would let her prepare any meals for him. He'd go uptown, buy some cookies or Coca-Cola or something like that, or Pepsi or something, but no. But old Francis, you should have known old Francis. You'd have gotten a kick out of Francis.
Well,
she and this, what's this fellow drives this truck, lives across from Beanie Rogers. I'm going to have to run.
Let's go. What?
Lloyd
that?
Johnson. You know Lloyd?
Yeah.
Lloyd's
right now.
Carpenter. Yeah, I'm gonna have to run back.
Yeah. What, Roberts? I'll tell you. What happened to I wouldn't see that eat over there.
Just superstitious. He's afraid of. For some reason, what he might have to eat.
Yeah.
Just superstitious. Just as Dickens. I don't know why. But he just was that way. You know.
Well, come on.
I'm going to have to run.
Yeah, let's go.
Thanks very, very much for the cake and the. Here's your good wife. She's here.
I've been looking for that for days.
Who's
I've
got,
made
steps
and
bars. Who's got
his
post
all day?
A friend of ours who comes up here. We have made 7 or 8 trips trying to find.
Thanks very much. A delicious cake.
You're so
you're
sweet
always,
to come.
Always have a good cake here.
Let me send Ruth a little piece. Because she's always so good to do things for us.
Ruth said, told Guy yesterday, I think it was, or the day before yesterday, that she, in the second year in high school, she had the same darn stuff that he's teaching in college. Didn't she, Guy?
What's that?
Didn't Ruth tell you that she had, in her English class at school, she had the same thing in the second year of high school that you're teaching these college students?
Yeah.
She did.
That's about right.
We used to have, I'll tell you the truth, when I went to high school, thank you, ma'am. When I went to high school, we our English classes were rough.
Is that right?
We had, of course she went to a private school, but we all had tough English classes.
Tough English classes, yeah.
Well, that's the end of that little visit with Roberts. Faye went over to get him. He had something to say, but never could get to it with this crowd, because he was going to talk about how the young folks act. We just come and realizing what sort of lives they lead. Fanny says, it's a job to be Faye's mother. Always a great relief to have Roberts here. Faye went over and she had to wait a long time. He was talking to somebody who was wasting his time. Oh, she stayed half an hour longer. I didn't know whether she's what had happened. And this is Channel 1 Right, 8:40. This is Saturday, the 28th or 30th of May. Saturday, 28th, 30th of May in the afternoon, after lunch. Suzanne and Jim are here, Faye and her little family. We all got in on the interview a little bit, on the visit by the kitchen table. Now it's 8:45, Channel 1 Right. This Saturday after in the afternoon, about the 30th of May, 1970.